This is CliffCentral.com.
Has LL Cool J played the halftime show at Super Bowl?
Do you think he should?
Just with this song. Just this song looping for like 11 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Ladies love Cool J.
Do they still this, yeah? Do they still?
He's still licking his lips.
He still appeals to certain age groups.
Is it LSL Cool J? Ladies still love Cool J. Because he's what? He must be late 40s now?
Yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah,
probably even 50s.
Yeah, this is the horrible thing about age. It hits it all. All of us.
He's okay for his age, though.
Mm, he's one of those who's aging well.
Ooh, right on the mark. 50 years old.
Yeah. He's 50.
Mm-hmm.
Yowzers. LL Cool J is 50. That's where you know life isn't fair. That guy's always going to be 32 in my mind. Then again, I was always 24 in my mind.
Oh, okay.
But Teddy's also just 30 forever, and that is Justice Malala. Well, in my mind, I mean, he's always very youthful. Comes in here with that boyish charm, that glint in his eye, only to deliver the best in political commentary every single week. Hi, Justice. I do like you coming in on a Monday. I feel that we start the week firm. We start the week solid. And here we are, in interesting times as always.
Very interesting times.
To say the least.
To say the very least. And where does one start, eh?
Well, you know.
Well, I tell you what, right now, Justice, the Proteas top six is full of crap. They can't bat for anything whatsoever. Please tell me they're something more encouraging with the ANC top six.
You know what's great about the ANC top six? My buddy just showed all of us that picture on Twitter. I don't know who tweeted it, but of... a bunch of guys trying to talk this kid down, and he says, a picture of ANC top six begging Jacob Zuma to step down. Isn't it? I find it amazing. It's no longer even a conversation. It's please, Baba, please come down. And then, no, I'm not. And then they rush back to Lutile House. Come on, everyone, report back, which is what they're doing today at 2 o'clock, by the way. The ANC's National Working Committee has been asked to convene to have yet another meeting about Jacob Zuma and his refusal to go. So do we know that he doesn't want to go or not? We have a very good source. Julius Malema tweeted late last night.
A very good source.
It's a very good source. So he tweeted at about 11:30 last night saying, Ubava says he's done absolutely nothing wrong. And he's told them straight up, thanks for coming, but I'm going nowhere. I'm not going to resign. I'm delivering my State of the Nation speech on Thursday, and you can do whatever you like. And then after that little clap, they all got in their cars and drove home. Oof. And called a meeting of the top of the NWC, which is the top 26 people in the ANC. That means at 2 o'clock, again, there'll be another long meeting well into the night. Then they're going to leave saying, okay, you top six, go and tell him now that he must go. Then they're going to go, so please, Mama, please. And he'll say, no, I'm not.
This is like a particularly bad pantomime, isn't it?
It's a bit like
the same act over and over.
You remember when Robert Mugabe was held in his house a few months ago, and the army said, oh, we're keeping him for his own safety. He's in the house and so forth. And they said, okay, we're going to resign. And all of us, 9 p.m., I think it was, all sat down, couple of beers on the table. You know, we're going to watch this thing. And he reads this speech.
Mm.
And the two crucial pages where he says thank you and goodbye, he sort of just puts them aside nicely and nothing happens. I think we're sort of going through that period with Jacob Zuma. No one wants him. Everyone thinks that he needs to move on, that the space, he's fouling up the space. But the man won't go. So it's back to the ANC to make a decision. But I think the ANC failed itself. The first thing, the ANC since 2000 and, in fact, since 1997 and 2002, when it held conferences in Stellenbosch and in Mafikeng, many people, and I think I particularly remember Moeletsi Mbeki saying, the ANC has a big problem. It elects its own president in December, and then it has 18 months before the next election. So the new guy has to sit around kicking their heels, waiting for, oh, in 18 months I'm going to be president. Oh, in 18 months. So they start being naughty. It started with Jacob Zuma. In 2007, he sat there saying, oh my word, I'll only be president in 2009 May, and I've won in December. Oh man, oh, what's this guy doing in my office? Oh, what's he doing in my chair? So, you know, it's a long lead time. So until September 2008, he managed to get rid of Thabo Mbeki after giving him a hard time, calling him names. People forget this, but you know, Jacob Zuma used to go around saying, oh, don't worry about Thabo Mbeki. Don't beat up that dead snake, he called him. You know, so one of the things the ANC should have done, whether in 2012 or now in December last year, it should have adopted a resolution saying, from now on, we're going to have our meetings, our national conferences, closer to the national. Imagine if the ANC was holding its national conference in December this year, 2018. Cyril Ramaphosa or Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma would have won in December this year, 2018. And then the minute they come out of that conference, they have to get ready for elections in May, June. So they wouldn't sit there saying, what's Zuma doing in my office? What's he doing? Because they know that it's 6 months to go. I've got to go and convince people to vote for me now. He's the past. But no, it's so long. Oh, he's got to live. Zuma has to deliver two more State of the Nation speeches. Oh,
two more.
You know, it's like, what's going on here? So the system was great when Nelson Mandela handed over to Thabo Mbeki, because, you know, Mandela was a statesman. It was, yeah, that's the coming guy. I'm just finishing off. We agree on policy and so forth. When you have two angry bulls, like you had Mbeki Zuma, now you have Zuma Ramaphosa, it just doesn't work out. And it's
it's not so much angry bull, so much a sitting bull. And unfortunately, Jacob's the one in the middle here who's kind of ruined this whole process.
But yeah, so, absolutely. Justice, what will Cyril be sitting there and thinking about if he's a chess playing man?
Well, Jacob Zuma is a chess-playing man himself.
Yeah.
Remember that when in 1964, I think it was, Jacob Zuma arrives on Robben Island, former Deputy Chief Justice Dikgang Moseneke arrives on Robben Island. Dikgang Moseneke goes to the head of Robben Island and says, Baba, I need to study. I'm 16 years old. I don't have time here. I want to get a matric and get a degree. The guy says to him, no, we don't allow people to study in this prison, so you can't. He says, no, I have to, and forces him, writes letters, and boom, gets the permission to get books and study for his, what was called grade 11 now, I guess, and grade 12. So what he does is that he organizes with other prisoners so that they form a little school. And the older ones, like your Mandelas, they teach the younger ones, like Dikgang Moseneke. When Dikgang Moseneke started the school, there were all these guys saying, yeah, come on, let's all study. Jacob Zuma said, nah, I'm good. I'm going to start a chess school. So he starts a chess school, and, you know, they sit around playing chess. So, you know, this is a man who's got a long experience playing the long game, of moving the chess pieces around. But Jacob Zuma keeps on checkmating, if that's the expression. The other side, they think, oh, we'll go and tell him we're not humiliating him. It's all nice and well. And he just throws it back at them, and he's still in power today. Mm. So Cyril Ramaphosa knows this person. Remember that when Cyril was the Secretary General of the ANC, the Deputy Secretary General was Jacob Zuma. In the early 90s, they worked together when the ANC came back from exile, and Cyril was from inside, and Jacob Zuma was the head of security of the ANC. So they go back a long way. I think they're eyeing each other up. But Cyril is sitting there thinking, I'm in trouble. if Jacob Zuma doesn't go, everyone is looking at Cyril saying, oh, we thought you were the president of the ANC. You're weak here. So a lot of people might think Jacob Zuma is under pressure. But there's a man on fire here, and that man is Cyril Ramaphosa. If he doesn't show that all the stuff he's been talking about, oh, we will make this happen, oh, we will make this work, and so forth and so forth. Every day that Jacob Zuma stays in power means that Cyril Ramaphosa is weaker and weaker and weaker. And so he's got to demonstrate that he's still got that marginal upper hand inside the ANC's NWC and in the NEC. So the process that Jacob Zuma has thrown at him actually puts him in danger. It puts Cyril Ramaphosa in danger because Cyril at 2 p.m. this afternoon meets with 26 people. Out of those 26 people, I would say 16 are pro Cyril Ramaphosa, 10 are pro Jacob Zuma. That meeting will likely say, no, now Jacob Zuma has to be recalled. It's no longer, let's speak to him, let's manage the transition. They'll say, Zuma has to be recalled now. Tell him that as the ANC, we are telling him to get out.
Mm.
Which is what they did with Thabo Mbeki in 2008. So this meeting of 26 people cannot take that decision. So what is likely to happen is that they will call an emergency national executive committee. That's 86 people. That's 86 people plus Bathabile Dlamini and the ANC Women's League, plus MK Veterans League, plus ANC Youth League, plus the provincial leaders. So Supra Mahumapelo, all those guys from the provinces, Limpopo and so forth, Sihle Zikalala maybe from KwaZulu-Natal and so forth. And now, if you remember on December 20, what happened at the ANC conference is that it was split right down the middle. My count is that Ramaphosa has 42 of the 80 seats, plus 4 in the top 6. So he's got about 52-53%. When the meeting starts, it's almost 50-50. So it's almost like Sia coming here saying, we're going to buy lots of bottled water. And he's going to put the proposal on the table. But he doesn't know whether Ben and Mabale will say yes or no. So it's a gamble. Because, you know, if Justice says, nah, I'm with Ben and Mabale and we're not buying the water, suddenly Sia is in charge here, but he loses the vote.
Mm-hmm.
And when we walk outside, when Cyril Ramaphosa has to be the one who answers questions as the president of the ANC, and he says the NEC has decided to keep Jacob Zuma, it's an absolute disaster. So he's painted into a corner by Jacob Zuma. You ask if he was a chess player. Absolutely. The other guy is an astute chess player as well. And I think what Jacob Zuma is doing is throwing it back at Ramaphosa last night, and knows that I'm throwing it at the NWC, but the NWC has to call a full NEC meeting. And that NEC meeting then has to say. Now think about the people who support Jacob Zuma. Tony Engeni, for example, has been making weird sounds about, no, the ANC stability, oh, we must keep on going, don't be fooled by white monopoly capital into getting rid of Jacob Zuma. So you already have people like that. People you wouldn't have thought were on the side of Jacob Zuma, but Tony Engeni clearly is. One of the more curious ones for me is Tito Mboweni, for example, who tweets things like, oh, a good leader knows how to, when to step down, da-da-da-da-da-da. But what he also says is, oh, for the sake of stability, let us not do anything rash. Let's keep on. So Jacob Zuma keeps on making people protect him by saying, ah, you want instability. Well, will there be instability if Jacob Zuma goes? My view is that there'll be dancing in the streets. There'll be parties, you know?
Yeah, I mean, people will be unstably happy.
You know, we might have to declare a holiday for a week. You know, that's what it would be. But he is he is adept and astute at turning things around like that and making it clear that he, in fact, he plays the victim. He plays the victim to such an extent that he says, if you do this to me, you know, there'll be instability. They need to call him out on it, but they haven't been able to call him out on it. If you listen to Gwede Mantashe yesterday, it was amazing that he said, no, we're not going to rough handle him. That was his word. We're not going to rough handle him. We're not going to humiliate him. This was in church in Katlehong. The church, by the way, was in a section of Katlehong called the Zuma section. So he'd gone to Zuma twice, Gwede Mantashe yesterday. So in this church service, he sounds like someone who's going to beg Zuma to, you know, do the right thing. And for me, it shows some of the weaknesses of the top six and a divided ANC and a divided leadership. That said, Jacob Zuma's actions are curious. If today we take a decision that, you know what, we're sending Siya to cover the march on Luthuli House this morning by this fringe grouping, Black First, Land First, and the Funeral Directors Association of South Africa. Now, please help me here. What are the Funeral Directors Association of South Africa? Okay, why are they marching to protect Jacob Zuma?
What? Hands off, Zuma Justice. Hands off.
The Funeral Directors Association.
They are passionate citizens, Mr. Malala, who also want to make a difference. That is exactly why.
Well, they also want the tender for his funeral, obviously.
Because they know people are coming for
it. I don't get it. You know, is this a civil society group? Is this a business association?
This sounds like the Bank of Baroda again. You know, these people are coming out of the woodwork to support him.
The Funeral Directors. Anyway, you might be interested that they are marching on Luthuli House today to defend Jacob Zuma. And so, you know, it's always interesting when you go to marches. Mabale, you've covered a lot of these things. When, you know, people come in all sorts of regalia. So I wonder if the funeral directors are going to come with a few coffins and caskets.
No. For dramatic effect.
Yes. You know, haven't you seen that? It's like a football match. Go to a Chiefs Pirates football match. Guys with their, what are those caps? The
Makarapa
and stuff like that. So, you know, I mean, I might pop into the Joburg CBD now to go check out the outfits at Luthuli House today.
Well, just make sure to post everything on to Insta Live, Garrett, Justice, because, you know, the rest of us must also see what's going down. Okay, so we're done with the ANC now.
No, we're not done with the ANC. Oh, we're not. For another 3 months.
Okay, so this is going to be an interesting week.
Yes.
Do you think, Justice, that over the last few days when journalists phoned Cape Town Mayor Patricia de Lille to get her comment on these criminal charges that have now been laid against her, do you think she would have been surprised to hear that that's what had happened, or do you think she would have gone, oh, so this is the next move that they're choosing to play?
I have to say, I think she probably knew that it was coming. Mm. She also exactly said, ah, that's the next step of this play. I'll tell you that the past week in Cape Town, in the city of Cape Town, has been extraordinary. You'll remember that the ANC has all along said, oh, Patricia de Lille, you're terrible. You should be voted out. So when the DA plays the motion of no confidence in Jacob Zuma over the years, for example, the ANC in the Western Cape would place a motion of no confidence in Helen Zille and a motion of no confidence in Patricia de Lille in the city council chamber. One of the things that happened last week, it's extraordinary, is that the ANC was saying, yes, Patricia de Lille is terrible. She hasn't run the water crisis properly. She must step down. And then the DA said, yeah, we're going to join you in removing our own guy. Mm. Suddenly the ANC said, oh, no, no. No, she's not too bad.
We had it wrong.
We had it wrong. We're not.
These people have no shame.
Not going to place a motion of no confidence in her. So the DA is sitting there saying, ish, we wanted to remove her. Now these guys have jumped to her side. We can't do it anymore. But for me, when those charges were placed, the first thing is that they are 5-6 years old. Why didn't this businessman go and lay charges at the time? If he has been suddenly, he has found his conscience, has suddenly decided, I want to be like Sia, I want to be an upstanding citizen, why doesn't he go to the police and say, in 2012 or in 2013, I was trying to get this tender for
fire extinguishers
and so forth, and I was asked by Patricia DeLille to cough up 5 million rand, I think is the figure.
Yep.
5 million rand, and I lost out because I wouldn't take bribes. Why doesn't he go to the police and do that? Instead, he goes to the DA and says this, and the DA goes and lays charges against Patricia DeLille. So it's all very curious, but I think the actual incidents themselves illustrate a DA that seems to be on the back foot, that seems to not know for sure what exactly it's trying to do in a post Ramaphosa or post Zuma political landscape. I think that they haven't managed their issues internally very well. So it makes a mockery when they say, let's have a motion of no confidence in Jacob Zuma, when their own issues in both the Western Cape legislature, where Helen Zille continues to tweet about how great colonialism was, and in the city of Cape Town, where their own mayor is basically saying these are a bunch of thugs and they are trying for a political stitch up just to get rid of me. And they don't seem to have any response, any proper response to it. Also, I think the way it's been handled has been so naive that you sit there and say, guys, you could have, found a way to discuss this and take it outside of the damaging public spectacle that it has become. Musimamani seems now as if he's running a party and he's the head, but he doesn't know what the body is doing. Every day now, there's James South, John Steenhuisen, all these other guys who seem to be doing the running on most of the issues, and he isn't there. So I think that the DA is not covering itself in glory right now. And I think taking on Patricia DeLille, particularly with this case, I think it's going to damage them. I think it's going to, I see one trajectory here, and it's that Patricia DeLille is going to walk away or be pushed out. And she's making a lot of noise, and I think she may end up, or we may end up, with a new party.
With Makosi Kosa.
The two of them. Maybe. I'm not sure that that's the case. I mean, Makosi Kosa seems, she tweeted yesterday, I was interested to see, that, the DA, the way it treats women of color is horrible and all sorts of things. And this is in a tweet, and she says, and Musimamani must stop calling me to come to meet with him because I'm just not interested. So I'm sitting there thinking, this is not a good start. So at least we know that Musimamani has been making calls. If you are the leader of a new political party, when you see a call from Musimamani, you're already thinking, oh my God, I mustn't kiss him because the last opposition leader kissed Helen Zille.
And we know how that turned out.
That didn't work out at all.
Did not end well.
Yeah. So I can imagine Musima Man is probably thinking, I need some new allies, da da da. But you know, you think about Ahang. And the DA, you think now about Patricia de Lille and what's happening to her. There seems to be, I think that she's out. I think that Patricia de Lille is just hanging on, maybe to build up a media profile or rebuild her media profile at the national level. Because here we are, we're sitting in Joburg talking about the mayor of Cape Town and her troubles with her political party. I think Patricia de Lille would be able to regroup some of the lost ground for the ID, her party. Remember that she came into the DA via the Independent Democrats. And there is, I think, traction for her to build, I don't know, maybe get 3% of the vote, maybe 5 in the national elections next year, and possibly even a significant showing in the provincial elections. So, you know, Patricia de Lille is not being particularly, she's not being accused of being a bad administrator per se. I think that there are specific instances of alleged mishandling of things. But I mean, she's no angel either. Some of her actions sound like someone who became a little bit power hungry, a little bit power mad. And, you know, I am the mayor and so it shall be. So, but I think. Clearly, this is the way out. I think that Patricia de Lille will form or reform her new party, her party, the ID. And I suspect we'll see a fracturing of DA support in the Western Cape when she does that. Will the charges against her stick? Certainly these ones from Joburg and that were laid yesterday, I don't think those will stick. I think that perhaps some of the allegations of impropriety in the DA, in the city council, in tenders and so forth, those may have a better chance than what we've seen.
All right, Justice, there is a message that I need to get to because I always forget to do this and then people feel like I don't, you know, I'm ignoring them. There's a message from Ashley saying, question for Justice. Who are the four in the top six that support Cyril? I feel like Cyril will be as ineffectual as he's been as vice president, judging by how the NEC looks. Tony Getty, are you serious?
The top six is made up of Cyril as the president. Guedeman Tasha is the national chairperson. I believe that he supports Cyril. I think they are aligned. They have a long history, those two, by the way. They go back to the National Union of Mine Workers together. They've both been secretaries general of the ANC. They kind of see the world in the same way. Then you have David Mabuza and Paul Mashatile. David Mabuza and Paul Mashatile are allies within themselves. I think that they are aligned with Cyril Ramaphosa and Guedeman Tasha on the issue of Jacob Zuma. You will know that Ace Magashule went to the KwaZulu-Natal last Sunday, in which he gave a long speech, among which he said, guys, don't forget, we have 5 years. In 5 years, we will get the ANC back. What does he mean? He's just been elected into the top six of the ANC. He also said to people, don't eat McDonald's. It's not bad for you. Now, McDonald's, you'll know that Cyril Ramaphosa, I think he's sold now, but yeah. Cyril Ramaphosa used to own the McDonald's franchise in South Africa. So when he said, don't eat McDonald's, what's he saying? He's saying, don't go with the man who is standing right next to me as ANC president. He also said later on that the Guptas, I know them as good businessmen, particularly seeing as his son works for them. So what you've got between him and Jesse Duarte, who was in the City Press newspaper last Sunday, saying that Jacob Zuma is going nowhere. By the way, she was absolutely right. Jacob Zuma is still around. You've got two solid Zuma must go, since Cyril and Guede. You've got two sort of, which side is our bread buttered on, and that's Mabuza and Mashatile. And then you have two Zuma Gupterites, and that's Mahashule and Jesse Duarte. Remember that, as I said, Ace Mahashule's son works for the Guptas. Jesse Duarte's son-in-law works for a Gupta, used to work for a Gupta-linked company as well. So I would say, nominally right now, it's 4-2 in the top six. But the top six can't fire Jacob Zuma on their own.
Right, which you made quite clear in the beginning of the show here.
Exactly. So that NEC is split right down the middle. And Cyril Ramaphosa now has the hard work of going to Figile Mbalula, who is in the NEC, saying, "Ay, Baba, look, you might get a cabinet position when I come in." So he might have to go to Malusi Gigaba and say, "Look, they are saying you must go to jail, but I will look upon you kindly." So he's got to build, out of those 80 people, he's got to continue to push to get, in my view, particularly the younger people, to say to them, "You want to stay with Jacob Zuma, the losing guy, or you want to come in with me? If you come in with me, there's a future for you. If you don't come in with me, down the line, the Hawks are going to find their backbone. Sean Abrahams is going to find his backbone, and maybe you'll be implicated. So this is the time to come in." I was interested that Figile Mbalula said 2 weeks ago, "Oh no, it's fantastic, it's great. Cyril Ramaphosa is standing up against corruption, and so we are going to see this fight ending." I think that the tide is turning against Jacob Zuma. It's only been 6 weeks, 5 weeks since he stepped down as ANC president. And I think that building alliances hard work, but I think Cyril is beginning to build them. So despite the small margin, I think that, look, you know, people might be feeling a bit sad that, "Oh, I've got the Monday blues, Jacob Zuma is still around." But Jacob Zuma is going. There are several reasons why he's going. The NEC, NWC now, has to say, "This man is going." The NEC will have its emergency meeting whenever it does, and it will say he's going. If he doesn't go, the EFF on February 22 already has scheduled, by the Speaker of Parliament, a motion of no confidence. Julius Malema, Musi Maimane, the entire opposition on Friday took a decision that if by today she hasn't agreed that Jacob Zuma cannot deliver the sonar on Thursday evening, they are going to court to force a motion of no confidence before 7 p.m. on Thursday. Even if you are Jacob Zuma's most ardent supporter, you have to say, "Do I want to spend the entire February in court in arguments about Jacob Zuma himself?" And so I think what you're seeing is just the last kicks of a dying horse. Jacob Zuma's history. He's like that screaming kid on the first day of school who just won't go and is, but they're dragging and pulling him out, and he's going to go. Now I think that he will go within the month. My view has always been that Jacob Zuma will leave on Thursday evening. He'll read out his speech and say, "Thank you very much." But that might not even happen.
I just don't see any sort of grace or sophistication with this. It'll be a messy end.
Jacob Zuma has been a messy, messy, messy leader of the ANC. So it's almost, we've done a 360 here. We've come back to the way he came in, Messi, he broke the ANC, he let Cope out and so forth. And I think that's what we'll end up with. Jacob Zuma will leave a messy legacy for the ANC.
All right. Justice, thank you very much, as always.
Absolute
Catch
pleasure.
Catch you back next week.
We might even have to have a special edition this week, depending on whether should I stay or should I go.
Justice, when that day comes, there'll be balloons, cake. We'll pop a few bottles, and you can come in and tell us. You can be the official verdict on it, the bottom line, all that.
Let's see how it goes.
The Burning Platform, as always, is presented by Nando's. Nando's is doing something quite interesting at the moment. You know, like, South African names from various sort of cultures and backgrounds are often seen as they get spell checked or something else. Well, Nando's have a campaign called Write My Name. So if you go to www.write, as in the direction, R-I-G-H-T, myname.co.za, you can submit your name before Human Rights Day, which is March 21st. So what Nando's want to do is essentially make that your name is not a mistake. Your name will be right. So when you type it in, you don't get it spell checked with that dreaded red line underneath it.
Oh, okay.
This is so clever. So go to writemyname.co.za. Nando's are trying to make your name a natural name because your name is not a mistake. Interesting, huh? We've got Rich coming up with a reality check, so we're going to take a little break and come back with that. And no doubt, more wisdom from the great man.
One recipe, one pot, too much oil. The kids are hungry. Mom's on the way home. Down the drain it goes. Drain is blocked. Put hot water. Now it's worse. Damn it. Try the green shandies. It doesn't work. Oh no, now you've really messed up. It needs something much stronger. Wait, use the stirring of cleaners. Ah yes, another drain saved thanks to the stirring. Protect yourself from the seen and unseen evils. Jay's Fluid, the strong one.
The strong one from Jay's Fluid to the strong one of Rich Mulholland. Rich, how you doing?
I'm doing good, dude. How are you?
Wow, that is one hell of a Skype line. Very good, thanks. Very nice to hear from you again. How's how's life in the disaster area known as Cape Town?
It's getting smelly, man.
Oh, no.
No, you know what? It's pretty good. I must say, I'm becoming a better person. I think it's changed my relationship with water overall, which is a good thing.
Yeah, I guess we all need a bit of a wake-up and a shake-up towards these things because we are quite wasteful as human beings. But it just seems like it's such a almost insurmountable task ahead. I mean, do you have those big water catches? Have you been fighting housewives in Woolworths for bottled water? How's it been going?
I mean, we have stockpiled quite a ton of stuff. I was up speaking in Neisner last week, and of course we filled the car with bottles and brought it back down and stuff like that. And Jazz kind of goes and waits in the queue every day and you know, gets some water and things. But actually, the real way, I mean, that's kind of planning for the disaster. I think what we're trying to do most is plan to try and help the disaster not to happen.
Yeah.
So it's all about things like, I mean, when we wait for the tap to get warm in the shower, we use a funnel, we capture that into a drinking water area. And then we bought this thing that's a tray that you stand in when you're showering, and it captures all the gray water. So it's not just like a bucket there. And then we use that for different things. Yeah, so we've got all kind of different systems going in the house. And everybody in the family, from the smallest kid to me, is kind of built around it. So it's quite cool. I think it's quite a positive. It's a really, really bad thing that I think will have a very positive long-term effect.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. All right, Rachel, what else is in your mind right now?
Well, I'll give you a choice. Do you want to go through the big issue or the grab bag of smoothies?
Well, let Mabali Maloy decide.
Let's go with the big issue.
Yeah, she always goes for the big stuff, Rich.
You must always go big.
Okay, well, so the bigger issue, the kind of singular issue was, and I'll tell you a story. So a few years ago, I was doing a talk for a big corporation, and one of my mates was in the audience. He's an Asian guy, and he won an award. And when he came onto the stage, I pretended to take photos of him as I announced the award. And I was taking photos and things and doing the wave sign, and he waved back at me, and we had a good laugh. We good mates. We actually ended up doing it twice that particular day because you had to get the award in two different sittings at the same thing. Anyway, the funny story was later on I got contacted by the client, and it was the idea that somebody was very, very offended by the fact that I played on this Asian stereotype. And I said to him, but it was a friend of mine who's Asian, and we joke around about that all the time. He wasn't offended in the least. They said, yes, but other people were offended for him.
Ah.
Now, this is a principle that does my head in. This idea of becoming vicariously offended is unbelievable. So yesterday, I'm reading this article, and it's written by a lady called Hannah James. Now, Hannah James is what you'd refer to as a grid girl. Do you know what a grid girl is?
Yes. Rich, I was actually going to talk about this like today or tomorrow because I found a clip of similar things. Yeah, I wrote about this last week as well. Absolute. Awesome. Well.
So for those who don't know, a grid is the person who holds the umbrella over the motorcycle driver rider or Formula One driver at the grid of the Formula One. And it's recently been banned because people were offended. Apparently somebody said something inappropriate and one particular person was angry. Instead of dealing with that issue, they've banned the grid girls altogether. And there was a lady who called Hannah James, who is a grid girl, and she kind of had this to say. She said, the issue at the moment is there are too many people being offended on people who are not offended at all. Firstly, I absolutely love my job. Secondly, I choose to do this job. No one forces me or any other grid girl to do it. Some of us do it full time. Some, like me, do it alongside other work. The idea that grid girls are no more than pretty faces infuriates me. I'm about to finish my degree and qualify as a social worker, and there are grid girls that are lawyers, accountants, models, mums. It varies so much. She says, with regards to the outfits being too sexy and us women being objectified, let me clarify something. I never work a job unless I'm happy with the outfit. When I do grid work, I'm always 100% comfortable with what I wear, and I do not feel any more objectified wearing what I do on the grid than if I put on a nice dress or some jeans to go out. What will be next? Will swimwear models be banned because they're wearing in catalogs is too revealing? And I think this kind of really speaks. This is the person who has now basically lost work because other people are offended on behalf of her. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Well, it's exactly what ISIS have wanted as well.
Yeah.
Rich, I've actually got a clip, if you wouldn't mind. I'm just going to try it for a couple of seconds here because it's on ITV this morning where you know these things will be talked up in a big way. So there's two grid girls and then there's like this middle-aged woman. I'm not making fun of her because she's middle-aged. I just find it's an interesting kind of combination chat this.
What does a walk-on girl do?
So basically, we're a professional model. We escort the darts player down a walk-on onto the stage. We're actually 9% of advertising. We wear a sash with the logo of the said sponsor for that tournament. And it just brings a bit of glitz, a bit of glamour to an event that's predominantly male.
And Charlotte, you say, you know, you felt like that community was part of your family because you've been working with them all for such a long time.
Yeah, we are like it does sound cliche, but we are a family. It is, you know.
Sorry, just to clarify, Rich's talking about grid girls, these are dart girls, same industry, of course.
Very tight group and everybody knows everybody and everybody's just lovely.
I think the issue is that people are saying that this is outdated, this is sexist, you know, that you're kind of up there as just this female, just a body to be sort of lingered.
I can't think of a female job that's more safe. We've got four big security with us constantly. It's, you know, such a safe environment. It's, we've been doing it for a long time, yeah. 6 years.
And it's a very enjoyable job and we feel very honoured to do the job.
Okay, well, Sally, let's come to you now because you say these types of jobs for women, these roles are demeaning.
Yes, I think they're broadly demeaning. I think what we're seeing is a social change that's happening, as you refer to grid girls as well, with Formula One. That's under review. So what we're seeing is a broader social change that sees these roles as, if not demeaning to the individual, because this is an argument, this is a choice of some of these ladies, it's demeaning broadly to women. So this is a structural change we're seeing with the Grammys. We're seeing it with, I think, Formula One will come.
Is this any job where a woman uses her image? So would this count all models in as well? Where does the
sort of line... I think the key here is... It's a sort of decorative role that's making money for men. And this, you've got to remember that this tradition has only been there really since the 1990s. This is not kind of an old tradition. This came about when they were trying to set, the PDC was trying to set itself up as apart from a different sort of darts organisation and say, look, we're going to do something quite loaded, quite sensationalist. You know, people sort of suffered when Miss World came off air. You know, people lost money in this. But it doesn't mean that the social change isn't necessary. And it is fans who also support support this. It's not all fans who are resisting it.
Okay, Rich, so I think it kind of backs up your point. It's quite interesting that this woman is getting offended for people on behalf because they believe it's an actual full-on movement thing, like decorative women are making money for men. How's that for a sentence?
Yeah, it's quite bizarre. I think her point there, and it's maybe more nuanced than simply to say that, she's completely wrong, is that these ladies are, even if it's their choice, furthering the idea that women are there to decorate men.
Yeah.
And that is, and what I think she's trying to say is that is bad for women at large as opposed to a few. And I guess to some small degree, you could argue that because she's a woman, she's not saying, don't do this, you're belittling yourselves. She's saying, don't do this, you're belittling women at large. But I think that, I still don't agree with her fully. I think that we need to be aware that people should have choice and agency in this. Sure. And they do. Now, I don't know if you remember that other example years ago where Madonna called that woman onto the stage in Australia. And then she took out her boob on the stage and everyone was horrified. And then the lady, her name was Georgia Georgia, she came out and she said, guys, I wasn't humiliated. I absolutely loved it. Only I get to decide if I'm humiliated or not. And then people became offended that she wasn't offended enough by this. That's how ludicrous it has become. So my point is that to me, there's nothing that belittles a person more than being offended on their behalf. It's as if you think they're not strong enough or smart enough to deal with that on their own. And it's like standing up for the poor downtrodden as if you're some superior protector. You know, if they have a problem, let them deal with it. If they don't want to deal with it, that's their issue. That's up to them. And so for me, what I'd like to say to people now is that the next time you attempt to get offended on someone's behalf, try get in touch with the role you think you're playing. Like try get in touch with the feelings you have at that particular moment. And I think you'll find yourself somewhat narcissistic. I think you'll find yourself that you're putting yourself on a pedestal as a protector. Let them fight their own battles. We don't have to be the big and strong person to stand up and fight for the downtrodden. They can often fight for themselves. This, by the way, obviously doesn't – I'm referring to simply the act of offense, not the fact of doing bad shit. You know, we should then all stand up for people.
Yeah, and sure. Totally. But Rich, I just always, for me, comes back to an attention-seeking thing. It's like this woman wants to seek attention for her and her own causes, and she's using other people. And we've seen it in other situations as well, is that people are just becoming, like, to be offended is like the thing to do because it gives you attention. And I think it's almost become this trap that people fall into, which is really sad.
Absolutely.
All right, Rich, well, we've run out of time. So Monday is flown past us. Gareth will be back. He'll be back, I think, next Tuesday because he's skiing. He's
awesome.
Yeah, he's having a good time. He's acting young. So we're all for it.
When he gets back, I leave. I'm going snowboarding in 3 weeks. So cool. I'm excited.
All right, so moral of the story, if you are cool and about town / the world, snowboarding / skiing, if you're not doing that, then we don't care about you. Thanks, Rich.
All the best. Have a great week. Cheers, team.
All right, guys, that's it, huh? Monday, just like that.
Yep, that's how we do it.
That went by very quickly.
Yes.
How we do it. Sia, what is going on in the third hour?
In the third hour, we have an interview Gareth did with Stavel Mark. So that what? I knew it. Yeah. God. He's a model, he's an actor, and in this interview, he's specifically talking about his book. So he's an author as well.
Wowzers, okay. So you got that to look forward to. If you have missed Justice Malala today, of course, you can get him on the Burning Platform on the CliffCentral.com website, along with Anthea, along with the sport, along with whatever else you wanted from today. It's all there. And we'll catch you back tomorrow. That is Sia with a salted wound. I don't know what that really means, but it's quite a soft song, isn't it, Sia?
Well, it's a bit of a deep song.
A salted wound. Last week, one lucky winner won cash just by voting in the One Plan Pet Parade competition. Now it could be your turn. Post a picture of you and your pet on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Make sure you tag Pet Parade, # Pet Parade, and cliffcentral.com, and the prize could be yours. Quick, short, sharp, this one. Wednesday the 7th of Feb, T's and C's apply. Did you know that your pet will help you live longer? I mean, we've been saying this for quite some time.
It's the truth.
I already feel quite youthful because of what I'm having Mauses in my life. According to a 2017 study in Sweden, where all the best studies take place, having a dog may lower your risk of dying from cardiovascular disease or other causes. So make sure you have pet insurance for your cat or dog to get them quality medical care where they need it. That's with One Plan Pet, where you can ensure the health of your pets for as little as 133 Rand per month. That's barely a round of drinks. It really is. Yep. SMS Cliff to 31644 now, and One Plan will call you back. SMS Cliff to 31644. Simple as that, sir.
That's it. Done and dusted.
Right, we need to get into interview Gareth had with...
Stavel Marks.
Stavel Marks.
This is CliffCentral.com.